Black History Short Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Amandre Johnson. Glad to have you here on episode 7. On this podcast, we discuss short stories from Black history, and we try to do it with a person that lived through the time period. Sometimes we go a little bit older than we can. Here, we think it's important to carry on the stories of those that lived through the times to understand a first-person perspective, and most of all, continue the legacies and memories that are important to our future. Here today, we have Miss Gail. Please tell us your birth year and where you were born.
My birth year was 1951, and I was born in Salem, Virginia.
Outstanding. All right, so today, Miss Gail, we are going to talk about Charlotte E. Ray, the first Black female lawyer. Just go ahead. Oh, before we start, I have to make my first moment of growth. So Ms. Gail, a couple podcasts back, I said on the reparations podcast, that, on that show, that businesses who are, you know, supporting the Black Lives Matter movement and bringing attention to it, I said that they were, you know, that was good. And I would like to take that back. Although I appreciate that, I said that is not enough. And I say that because in these conversations that I've been having here recently, the people who are against like the Black Lives Matter movement and against the uplifting of Black people, the people who support the Confederate flag and support the Confederate statues being up, those people actually get out and do something. Like, they're out there protesting and they're out there doing something. So, you know, just making a post about it is good and I appreciate it. Don't discredit it, but it's not enough. And I said it was, and I've grown, and I'd like to say it's not enough and they should do more. So,
My first retraction
and, you know, first thing growing. So anyway, Charlotte E. Ray was born January 13th, 1850 in New York City. Her father was a Reverend Charles Bennett Ray. He's a prominent New York abolitionist and minister who served as the pastor of Bethesda Congregational Church and was also the owner of a very popular African-American newspaper called The Colored American. Her mother, name was Charlotte Augusta Burroughs Ray, was raised in Savannah, Georgia. Shortly after she was born, her parents moved to Washington, D.C., and as she grew up, she entered the Institution for Education of Colored Youth. It was the only school in the D.C. area that allowed African-American girls to become pupils, and her parents really valued education. The school taught domestic skills and had a focus on training teachers. Charlotte graduated from the institution in 1869 at the age of 19, and she had so much ambition, and she knew that she could do more, and she wanted to do more. So she went to the Howard University, which at the time was only about 4 years old, and they hired her as a teacher for its preparatory and normal department, which is the part of the university that trained school teachers. And she wasn't satisfied with this. And I see this going on today. A lot of teachers who start off as teachers end up wanting to do other things, but her ambition was to attend law school. And at that time, Howard University discouraged women from enrolling in law school. So Charlotte, being the smart person that she was, applied to law school anyway under the name C.E. Ray to disguise her gender. So when you see, you know, it was Charlotte, they automatically knew female not getting in, but they saw C.E. Ray and was like, could be a male. So they get her application, they admit her into the law school. And when she shows up, they're like, wait, who is this? And how did she get here? And they went back and forth, but reluctantly, they accepted her application and she attended classes while also still teaching in the preparatory and normal department. She was in law school for 3 years from 1869 to 1872, where she concentrated mostly on commercial law. When she graduated from the program in 1872, she became the first Black woman to graduate from an American law school and receive a law degree. In fact, and this is the big fact of the podcast, she was only the third American woman of any race to complete law school. Another first, on April 23rd, 1872, she was admitted to the bar. Months prior to April 23rd, 1872, the District of Columbia had recently removed the word male from its requirements on the bar. So she applied, and she applied and got in. And that was a first also, which was amazing. And again, there were some conversations that reluctantly let her go back through, but no more, the word male was no longer on the requirements. So they had no choice. Shortly after passing the bar, Ray opened her own law office, and she did that by advertising in a newspaper run by well-known Frederick Douglass at the time. But she found it very difficult to be an attorney. She did not get a lot of business, and that was due generally to racial and gender bias. So after she found that she could not get the work that she wanted and needed, she ended up returning to New York in 1879 and went back to being a school teacher. But before she moved, silver lining, Martha Gatley was a resident of Washington, D.C., and her marriage was terrible. It was a nightmare. Her husband drank, it got violent, and one night he used an axe to chop a hole in the floor, and he threatened to push her through the hole into a room below. He refused to bring her water when she was sick. When she left the house, he nailed up the entrance and put padlocks on the door. Safe to say, this guy was cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. So Martha decided she had enough, and she decided to file for divorce, which was a very bold move at the time, because especially for her, she was an illiterate woman. And in 1875, the law didn't really care about domestic violence, particularly in the African-American community. So, you know, she took an unusual move of hiring, of trying to hire an attorney. But she hired one that represented her. That was Charlotte E. Ray. So she took the plea to the District of Columbia Supreme Court and managed to get a victory on Martha's behalf. That is her story of like victory, and it's the only one that I was able to find because her career had been so short, and that's just because of her gender bias and race, racial discrimination. So after she moved to New York and she was a teacher, while I was a teacher, she had become a major advocate for women's suffrage. She was a delegate to the 1876 Conference of the National Women's Suffrage Association. In 1895, Ray joined the newly formed National Association of Colored Women. In 1897, she moved to a suburban community of Long Island, Woodside, New York, where she lived out her life. In 1886, at age 36, she married a man named Frame. I think it's how you pronounce it, F-R-A-I-M. But as the years went on and she got further away from her being the first Black female lawyer, her history is lost. So there's no telling how long they were actually married, but studies and research show that there were no children. And on January 4th, 1911, Charlotte E. Ray passed away in Woodside, New York. She is super important because even today, according to history.com, 85% of attorneys are white and just 5% are Black. And minority women still face a significant wage gap compared to their white male counterparts. In honor of Charlotte E. Ray, there is still an award given called the Charlotte E. Ray Award, and is presented to a woman lawyer for her exceptional achievements in the legal profession and extraordinary contribution to the advancement of women in the profession. So although her history is not as deep as we would like it to be, it is still well-known fact that she's the first Black female lawyer, and she's still honored for that today. And the Charlotte E. Ray Award is a super prestigious award that is given out. But what we'll do, that's the end of our story. We're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. And then coming back, we'll answer some questions.
Okay, I'd like to say that in March of 2006, the Northwestern University School of Law in Boston, Massachusetts, charter of the Phi Alpha Delta Law Fraternity International, honored Ray by naming her newly chartered chapter after her in recognition of her place as the first female African-American attorney.
Outstanding. You said it's Northwestern?
It's a Northeastern University School of Law in Boston, Massachusetts.
What?
Yes, and that happened in March 2006, yes.
What? I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. All right. Yes. So we'll get to Short Stories of Black History. I'd like to first give a shout out to the Perlo podcast, as those guys have helped me start this podcast and they have inspired me to do this. And we are all part of the Perlo Podcast Network, as they call it. And Dr. Todd the Colonel, who recently did an amazing, amazing podcast, although I disagree with them and their opinions on Tim Tebow, but we'll keep that for another conversation. But back to short stories. So this is a part of a podcast where we ask questions. Our first question to Ms. Gale is, do you believe you have ever been discriminated against because of your gender or race?
Yes, I do. Because I applied for a job and I was told that I was overqualified for the job, mm-hmm. but I had previously worked in the same capacity, but was given a job in packaging, which I thought was below my ability to perform the job. And I think it was because I was Black and I was a female, and they said that that was mostly a male position.
So they said that you were overqualified for a job?
Yes.
And then gave you a job?
Yes.
Huh.
They gave me a job packaging instead of letting me perform the job in the warehouse, which I was already accustomed to doing because that's what I did previous on another job.
Did you complain about that? Did you say something?
Yes, I asked them why, and they said that with the skills that I had, they were overqualified for what I would be doing in the warehouse. But to package product and put it in a box, I wasn't overqualified for that.
Yeah.
Huh. Which didn't make sense.
You right. So did you work there a long time, or did you refuse that job?
No, I worked there for 19 years, but I was able to move up the ladder and do like quality work and supervise and whatever like that.
Okay. Is that job still around today? Is that company still around today?
Yes.
Okay. I won't ask you to say their name then.
No, they're still around. Oh. And people still have the same problems.
Really?
Yes, because there's no union.
Ah, I see.
Like they say, if they catch your name on a petition for a union, you're automatically fired. So, you know, you never could get the people together to...
I didn't know they could do that. Wow.
They do. They still do to this day.
Wow. That is unbelievable. Well, I asked you that question because we talked about Charlotte E. Ray, who couldn't find work, and it was specifically because of her gender or race, and she was kind of like forced out of the field that she really wanted to do and really loved to do, and you know, I think that's terrible. It's absolutely awful. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my next question, because Charlotte E. Ray is a big step for, you know, Black people, Black women specifically. She's a representation of, you know, a position of power, being a lawyer, like, you know, everybody looks up to and want to be. How important was representation for you growing up?
Well, when I was growing up, there really wasn't much of representation. It was either your parents or they would have to hire a lawyer, in which then a lawyer would be a white lawyer, and they really didn't push the issues for you to do what you wanted to do. It was, you know, company orientated. So you really didn't have any representation.
Mm. Did you ever see any, not maybe just female, but Black lawyers in general?
Well, there were some Black lawyers, but they went along with the system.
Ah.
I think to stay in business.
Right. Right. That's unfortunate. Growing up, who was your female role model and why?
I would say my mother, because you could go to her and you could tell her and talk to her about anything. And there was always an open communication between her, that, you know, that you didn't have to fear what you were saying, that you could say it. And if she didn't have an answer for you, she would try to find the answer for you. But it was always something positive that she came back with, that, you know, that would help you in whatever it is you were having a problem with.
Okay. Okay. Outstanding. Do you think that you had, so for example, you know, kids today or teenagers today, like their role models would be like LeBron James, maybe Barack Obama. Do you think that you had like a female role model that you would see, you know, in the media or, you know, in town?
At the time, I really didn't, because, you know, I wasn't focused on, you know, somebody else being a role model to me. I was like, okay, I'm going to listen to my mother and I'm going to do what she tells me to do. But then when I was in like the fifth grade, there was a teacher that I looked up to because she was there. She tried to help everybody. It wasn't just like, you know, you just had to come to school and do your work. She was there for you.
Right. Okay. Okay. Interesting. What does it mean to be a strong Black woman in America? That's a big question.
I feel that being a strong Black woman and doing things the right way, sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it's still racial discrimination and obstacles placed in your way so that you don't succeed. People telling you you're not right for the job, that things are not right. This, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. But if you have faith in God and you pursue the challenge, whatever it is that you want to do, everything is possible through God. And he will bring you through whatever obstacle you have, and believe in yourself. Never let anyone tell you you can't do something, because you can be anything you set your mind to be.
I agree 110%. And I believe that, you know, Charlotte E. Ray is an example of an amazingly strong Black woman, because, you know, everybody who told her no, and she told them yes, and she got it done. She did. And
yes, I agree.
And that's, I'm glad that we still honor her today and what we do. In what ways were you encouraged to be a strong Black woman?
Well, I was encouraged by being told, get an education, stay focused, stay out of trouble. Stop, look, and listen to what's going on around you, and let no one, I mean absolutely no one, pull you from what you believe in. If you strongly believe in it, believe in that. Don't let them change your mind because of the way they think. You have to think for yourself, and that's how you that's what I was encouraged to do, to hold my head up high and to go on with life like, it, you know, like I wanted to go, not because somebody else wanted me to go this way. Do what I wanted to do.
Indeed. Regarding Black history, what do you consider to be the most significant event in your lifetime?
I would say that was the Martin Luther King movement. It was all about peace and unity, mm-hmm. even though at the time the whites didn't want us to become a unit. They wanted to keep us segregated and apart and keep us fighting among ourselves. But Martin Luther King had that vision that one day we would all be as one and wouldn't be any difference.
Did you go to protests?
Yes, I did walk in some.
Can you elaborate on that? Tell me about that.
Well, when we were walking and, you know, people, well, white people was throwing stuff at us and hollering racial slurs and all of that. But we were told to keep our focus on moving ahead. Don't worry about them calling you names or throwing stuff, because it was all about peace. Let them do what they wanted to do as long as none of us got hurt. That's what we did.
Because we have talked about bee stings several times before. Not once have you ever brought up that you went to a march or anything. So I want to know all the details on this. Where was this at?
It was just, you know, a group of people here that got together, and we walked down town through to Lee Junior High School. It was then a junior high school. And, you know, it was just about peace, you know, because we didn't want to fight or nothing like that. But while we were walking, things were thrown at us and all this kind of stuff. But that's just the way it was. But, you know, the police didn't bother us or anything, because it was peaceful, and we obeyed the lights and the traffic and all of that. It was just a peaceful walk.
How many people do you think it was?
Oh gosh, I don't even remember how many people it was. It was mostly, you know, like the younger generation, and then it was like maybe it was older people too, but you know, it was all in good faith. It wasn't like we went out there to fight or carry guns or sticks or anything like that. It was just a peaceful walk.
So you were what, 17, 16 then?
I was about 14, 15, around that age.
Okay, so I got a question, because I always wondered this, and you know, it's slightly off topic. Today, like when I go to the protests, I found about these protests via Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you know, text message. How did y'all organize this? Like, how did you find out about this protest?
It was just, you know, in school, they said, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and everybody, we're going to meet him, we're going to go, and that's what happened.
Oh, okay. Okay, that makes
sense. We didn't have no cell phones and all that kind of stuff back then to do, you know, social media, nothing like that.
I know. I can't even imagine a world to where I can't get my information off, you know, Twitter or immediately in my hand. So that.
Yep.
That really is amazing to me that y'all were able to do that. Okay. So, who was the most influential person in your life and why?
And like I said before, it was my fifth grade teacher, Miss Dolly Kennedy. She once called me to the side and told me, she said, Gail, hold your head up high. You have dreams. Don't let anyone stop you from your dream. Don't let anyone tell you you cannot achieve your dreams, because you can do it. You're smart, you're Black, but you have the potential to do whatever it is you want to become or be. She said, always remember that. And from then on, you know, that's the way I tried to live my life. Like, I could do whatever I wanted to do and nobody could keep me from doing it.
I agree. That's where I get that from. Was that teacher white? Was she a white lady?
No, she was Black.
Did you have a lot of Black teachers coming up?
Most of my teachers were Black until I got in junior high school. And then I had white teachers and Black teachers, but that was because I had to leave the Black schools and go to the white school. And from there, from junior high through high school, I had mixed teachers.
Okay. Have you ever attended or heard of a Freedom School?
No.
Those are schools that, and it may not, I mean, they weren't everywhere. They were not. And I just, something I have recently learned about in the past couple of years is schools that taught kids, students that would have been around your age during the summer, you know, how to protest, how to exercise their rights, how to organize, teach them about Black history, stuff that you wouldn't necessarily learn in schools. And, you know, when you say y'all organized, y'all's protests in schools and whatnot, I was wondering if that were if that was where that came from.
Oh, no, no, no. That was just something the students decided to do, and we did it.
That's super brave of y'all.
Yeah, it was, because we didn't know how it was going to turn out, whether we were going to get beat up or taken to jail or what, but so it so happened that they didn't bother us.
Huh? Fight the good fight. That's all you could do.
That was it.
I love that you talk about, you know, your teacher being your most influential person, because in a bunch of the podcasts where we talk about, like right now, doing all the protests and everything that's going on, we talk about where to move forward at. And one of the big advancements that we talk about is education, because that's such a huge deal on, you know, learning. And teachers have a big effect, because I've had teachers ask me, you know, white teachers ask me, like, what do I do in this situation? You know, how do I handle this? And I tell them, you teach kids how to interpret and analyze information. So you got to continue to teach them how to interpret and analyze information in a way that, you know, reflects their best values and whatnot. Because apparently that's not what has been going on everywhere. And that's a problem. And
that is a problem.
You know, and you're talking about,
some teachers, they don't care whether you get the education that you need or not, because there are some tell you, I got mine, you got yours to get. And that's not the right attitude to have as a teacher.
I agree. And I think that is huge. You know, you talk about your fifth grade teacher, you know, I don't know how long ago that was, but that, you know, that was a good time ago. And that's still, you still remember that as the most influential person in your life. So that's huge. Yes. And the educational system as a whole needs to recognize the influence that teachers and coaches and, you know, mentors in schools have, because it's a big deal.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It is. But
I was telling you, like, if there's one person that takes an interest in you and tries to show you the things that you need to do to make it in this world, that's a big difference.
Agreed.
It means a lot.
Agreed. I'm so glad to hear that, because as a teacher, it makes me feel like it reaffirms that, you know, I'm doing something. It does.
Yes.
It makes me feel good about my job and what I do, because I still look at, you know, I can remember every teacher that I ever had. And when, you know, every year when we decorate our Christmas tree, I still got those Christmas ornaments from kindergarten. that we made. So it's a big deal, big influence and whatnot.
It is.
But is there anything that you would like to add?
I would just like to say that the youth and even some of the older ones need to learn about that history. They need to know where they came from, how things came about, who invented stuff, and go with that, because they're telling you this person invented something, and they didn't. It was really a black person that did it, but a white person took credit for it. And they need to go back and they need to read their history and learn these things. And then they would have a better concept of life itself.
Indeed, and I agree definitely. And that's, you know, part of reforming education is a part of that. I'm a big advocate of reforming education. And there are some schools today, there's a school in Kentucky that teaches history from an African standpoint. So like everything that they learn in history is from basically views of Africa. And I thought that was a huge change to the narrative of history.
Yes, because you never heard this stuff before. Unless you read, you don't know that.
Right.
You just go by what they have there in front of you, and all that stuff, some of it is not true. You have to read it for yourself to find out what is true and what isn't.
I agree. I go out my way to definitely try to read things specifically about Africa, and it is, that stuff is, you know, tough to come by. It is.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Gotta dig a little deep.
Yep, and I said there are a lot of books that you need to get and read And if you could get a hold to them and you can, you know, read them, then there's a lot of knowledge in them.
Indeed.
A lot.
And I'm glad. How many marches did you go to or did y'all organize?
If we just did that one. We didn't do any more.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's big. Because, again, I talk to y'all about this, and I do this podcast because when I ask y'all about history and stuff like this, y'all kind of shrug it off like, you know, yeah, that happened. I was there. Because during all this that I get to go through and I get to read about every single person in it and dive into the deep information, y'all still have to live life. You know, it's life to y'all. And this podcast and these questions are the way to try to find out some new information that I didn't know, you know, personally for me.
Yeah, because, you know, there was areas that at one time that we couldn't walk through because if we did, we'd get beat up or stuff thrown at us or whatever. But it was a chance that we used to take because we wanted to play sports. Mm-hmm. And in order to play sports, there was no bus for you to get back home or to get there. So you have to walk and then walk back. And it's through neighborhoods that they didn't allow Black people in. But we did it. And we survived.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Mm-hmm. The reason why you know, we're able to thrive today. I told Miss Ines that, you know, y'all made it so we are able to survive and thrive today. And we're still pushing for some of the same things that y'all were.
And yes, that's true.
And it will continue. It will. It will. But we'll keep pushing. We'll keep surviving.
Yes, we will.
But I'd like to
keep learning.
Yes, ma'am. I'd like to thank you for joining us today. If you would like to reach out to us and give us ideas for the podcast, tell us ways we can improve, maybe make a correction, research, feel free to email us at bhshortstories@gmail.com. That's B as in Black, H as in history, and short stories, plural. We'll see you guys next week.